This is 1A. I'm Jen White in Washington. The 2020 presidential race broke new ground, and not just because of the pandemic or the billions of dollars spent or the post-election legal challenges from the Trump campaign. For the first time in U.S. history, voters in Maine chose their presidential candidate using ranked choice voting. Many states are already using the alternative voting system for some local, state, and federal races, and several more have asked voters to weigh in on the possibility of using it for future races, including voters like Phil in Concord, Massachusetts. He reached out to us about covering ranked choice voting.
I pitched this topic because I really think ranked choice voting is something that can help repair our democracy. To me, it's a kind of a no-brainer. We are in need of something different than the two-party system currently, which is not serving us very well. And yet, you know, we had a ballot initiative here in Massachusetts this November to introduce ranked choice voting, but unfortunately it failed. And this surprised me. I asked around, I talked to my friends and people I knew, and I was surprised to find out that many of them voted against it, mainly because they didn't understand it or thought it was too complicated, or just didn't know what it was.
Phil, thanks for your pitch. Well, today we continue our listener-suggested series with a conversation about ranked choice voting. How does it work? And is it a feasible solution to some of the challenges of our election system? Joining us now is Rob Ritchie. He's the president and CEO of Fair Vote. It's a nonpartisan organization that advocates for election reform measures, including ranked choice voting. Rob, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Jen. It's terrific to be on the program.
So I want to start by having you walk us through how ranked choice voting actually works.
Yeah, and I think the caller really set it up nicely that we are in a state of our politics where I think a lot of us feel it's broken. A lot of us wish we could have more choices. But in the current system, you know, it really punishes you when you try to offer more than two choices. You get the whole spoiler conversation and voting for the candidate you like the most can actually help someone win who you like the least. And that's pretty nutty when it comes to having a good system. Ranked choice voting tries to deal with that with sort of a simple concept, which is that just like most of our life, you don't put all your eggs in one basket, you get a backup choice. And so you get to say, here's my first choices. Here's the one I really want to win. But in the event that they're not, you know, I don't have my first choice available, they're in the ranked choice system, they're finishing last, I want a backup and I want my second choice. And that's really all it is. So you rank candidates, first, second, third. Everyone, you count all the first choices. If someone wins more than half the votes when you're voting for mayor or president in Alaska and Maine now, they win. But if not, the candidate in last place is out and the ballots go to their next choice and you continue until someone is over 50%. And while it did lose in Massachusetts and actually won 13 of the other, all the other 13 ballot measures over the last few years. And I think when voters are in a situation where it really solves a problem that they understand, they seem to really like ranked choice voting.
So take us to the Georgia Senate race, for example. How different would that election have looked if ranked choice voting was used instead?
Well, the voters back in November would have just had a ballot where, like, let's say the simpler race where there were just three candidates. That was the Sonny Perdue, John Ossoff race with a Libertarian. You would have been able to say who your second choice is. And in this case, the Libertarian finished third. And so that candidate would have been eliminated. And anyone who voted for the Libertarian would have had a chance to have their ballot go to their second choice. And they would have had an option to rank a second choice. They don't have to.
Okay.
And that's actually what they do in, you know, lots of cities. We're up to about 25 now. And most voters will rank about 90% when it's a race that they seem to care about. And almost everyone, you know, 299 out of every 300 people basically cast a ballot that counts.
Does ranked choice voting impact the outcome of these races or just the voting experience?
It does both. I think one is you can make sure you have representative outcomes, and we certainly let's keep in mind, we usually only have two people running, and that can be very frustrating to people. And it contributes to a lot of this broken politics that we've all been experiencing quite vividly and tragically over the last week. But it's something that's really, I think, that binary politics is really broken. And so that's what we usually see. But then when you get a third candidate in, Then you get situations like Ralph Nader, the controversy over his candidacy in 2000, and, you know, did he cost Al Gore the election in Florida, or Ross Perot? You can actually change outcomes. And then the more, though, consistent value I think that we see is the very act of or action of giving voters the right to rank, the right to say, hey, who's my second and third choice, means that now candidates have a direct electoral incentive to engage with more people and to learn to be, figure out how to be a second choice as well, and a third choice. And you see most winners in ranked choice voting elections actually getting an affirmative ranking from 65-70% of people because they've made that extra effort to try to connect with them.
Give us an overview of how ranked choice voting is currently being used around the U.S. What are some states that have implemented it, and is it for all of their races or only certain ones?
Well, Maine is the sort of the leading the way. They use it now for president, which they did this past year for U.S. Senate, U.S. House. They use it for all their primary elections, and then their biggest city of Portland. And by the way, Portland voters had a chance to decide whether to extend it to more offices last year, and 81% of them chose to do so, which shows that they really are kind of appreciating what it does there. Alaska just voted to change their U.S. Senate and U.S. House and presidential elections and all their state legislative races. They'll use it for the first time in 2022. New York City is going to use it, which I'm sure we're going to get into today, but they're going to use it for the first time this year for like vacancy elections and all their big primary elections for mayor and so on. And then it's used in about 25 cities. Six more passed it last year, and we expect more cities in Utah are considering expanding its use right now for their use later this year. And the numbers are keep going up.
Well, we got this message from Peter in Detroit.
I lived in New Zealand for about 25 years, and New Zealand uses a ranked voting system, and it's there's an entire list that parties put out, and you vote based on that list. I can only say that as a resident of that country, I found that it certainly gave me a higher quality of representation in government. I think it's a much better system, and it's certainly one that the United States could take a look at.
Rob, you've developed and implemented ranked choice voting in more than 20 cities in the U.S., but I want you to give us an example of a city that's implemented this system and talk about how you think it's changed that city's elections, its campaigns, or even how officials govern.
Well, it's, you know, it you don't want to sort of overstate the impact of one change. However, I think there's a lot of really positives that one can learn from. Say, the Twin Cities of Minnesota have been using ranked choice voting now for multiple elections. Minneapolis and St. Paul and several more cities just in the last few years have voted to join them there in that state. Minnesota and California are jockeying back and forth for most number of cities with RCV. But I think that we've now seen candidates win mayoral races. They have sort of two young mayors right now who both ran campaigns where they really had to make that extra effort to connect with more people. And that's the pattern that you see. The candidates that do best, because it doesn't mean that every candidate does what they should do, but the candidates that do best are the ones that really make that extra effort to find a way to be both people's first choice, which you can't not be a good first choice candidate to win, but then to figure out a way to be second and third choices. These are every city has its challenges. Minneapolis obviously has important challenges involving policing and the conversation about that. They have a big race for mayor this year. In some ways, we will see how ranked choice voting kind of creates a conversation or kind of allows a full conversation, partly because all the key candidates are on that November ballot when it matters, the way all the cities use RCV, except for New York, which is keeping its primaries. But all the other ones, they just have a single election in November, and you have, you know, a full expression of dialogue, and then candidates needing to reach out and appeal to more people, and you really get a lot of strong testimonials from the candidates about what they do differently, which is really start talking to everybody, and that's a consistent theme from RCV races in action.
We got this tweet from Jack who says, "I was really bummed out when Massachusetts didn't go for ranked choice. What I'm wondering is why would somebody oppose it, and who tends to oppose it? To me, it just seems like extra voter power with no downsides." When you're making the case for ranked choice voting, Rob, where do you get the pushback?
Well, I'll say one stat from Massachusetts was that jumped out to me is voters under 30, about 80% of them voted for ranked choice voting. So I think that people who are coming into the electoral process, who are kind of used to a culture of choice, are not too tied to ways that we've done things, are kind of the most ready to vote for change. When New York City voted for it with 73% yes back in 2019, people of color were the largest numbers of supporters for it, or the highest percentage. And I think it's people kind of ready for change, ready for something new. And there has to be a problem that they see to fix, right? And that's where I think that Massachusetts voter said, well, that seems a little confusing, which, by the way, they had a very confusing ballot question in Massachusetts, which you can't always control as an advocate. It's like, well, what does it really fix? And so they need to make that connection. But if it's like, oh, we're replacing a runoff election, or we've just had a really controversial vote for governor where, you know, it got split and someone won with 40%, you know, then people can kind of understand what it's doing, and people seem to be ready to vote for it in that situation.
We're talking to Rob Ritchie, the president and CEO of Fair Vote. Coming up, we'll hear from a newly sworn in state official who was elected via ranked choice voting, Maine Secretary of State Shenna Bellows. We're also hearing from you. Eileen emailed, Portland, Maine implemented ranked choice voting for its mayoral election a few years ago. I loved it immediately as the candidates talked about the issues, not each other. They, of course, want second choice votes. I remain an avid supporter. It's ridiculous to pay for runoff elections when the choices can be made at one time. Claims that ranked choice voting is confusing makes no sense to me. How can someone not understand placing a 1, 2, etc., or nothing besides a candidate's name? We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment. I'm Jen White. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. I'm Jen White. This is 1A. We're continuing our week of listener-selected shows with a look at ranked choice voting. With us is Rob Ritchie, the president and CEO of Fair Vote. It's a nonpartisan organization that advocates for election reform measures, including ranked choice voting. We also want to hear from you. If you voted using ranked choice voting, or you have questions about how the system works, you can comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or send us an email at 1A@WAMU.org. I want to bring two more voices into the conversation. Joining us now is Shenna Bellows, Maine's newly elected Democratic Secretary of State. Secretary Bellows, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Jason McDaniel. He's a political science professor at San Francisco State University, specializing in voting behavior. Professor McDaniel, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So, Secretary Bellows, first off, congratulations. But before we dive into ranked choice voting, I want to ask how you're feeling about the role of Secretary of State in light of the turmoil following the 2020 election.
Well, it's a privilege to be in this role. I was sworn in a week ago Monday, and I think it's so important. There's nothing more important to our democracy than the integrity of our elections. At the same time, it was very sobering to see the violence of the insurrection, and we are increasing security here at our office, which is on the grounds of the state capitol here in Maine. And it's deeply concerning, the violence and division.
Well, you're Maine's first woman Secretary of State, and you were elected via ranked choice voting. And it's the first time Maine voters have elected a Secretary of State this way. How did it shape the way you ran your campaign and tried to appeal to voters?
Maine is unique in a couple of ways. So I was actually elected by the legislature, which is what Maine's constitution directs. However, it was a very competitive race with many candidates, and we did conduct the election in ranked choice voting. And on the ballot this November, our presidential and federal elections were also conducted via ranked choice voting, which meant that the voters, whether we're talking about the voters who were voting in the presidential in November or the legislators who elected me in December, were ranking their choices first, second, third, and so on. And that is how, in fact, I was selected.
You've been a proponent of ranked choice voting for some time. Why do you believe this system works for the state of Maine?
Ranked choice voting is really a way to ensure that the voters' voices are heard. Because voters can vote their principles or their heart rather than political strategy. You know, in Maine, we have a long tradition of independent candidates, but one of the age-old questions with any independent or third-party candidates is, are they a serious candidate or is it merely a spoiler for the traditional two parties? Well, with ranked choice voting, you can vote for an independent or a third-party candidate first and not fear that that vote might mean that the person that you like the least ends up winning.
Well, currently, ranked choice voting is not used in the governor's race or legislative contests because of Maine's constitution. Are you thinking about how to expand the system to those races as well?
There is legislation. Senator Dave Miramont has introduced a bill this year to amend Maine's constitution to extend ranked choice voting to the state level races. We are using it in state level primaries. There's other legislation pending introduced by Representative Victoria Morales to make ranked choice available in all municipal elections. So there's certainly a conversation about how to expand the use of ranked choice voting here in Maine, because it has worked very well. We've now used it in two elections. We first implemented ranked choice voting, in two general elections. We implemented it in November of 2018 when we had a very competitive congressional election where Jared Golden challenged then incumbent Representative Bruce Poliquin. And Bruce Poliquin won on the first round but did not achieve a majority of the votes. When it went to ranked choice voting, the independents, Tiffany Bond and Will Hoare, their voters had cast a vote for them first, but had actually chosen, the majority of them had chosen Jared Golden second. So when the tabulation was completed after ranked choice voting, Jared Golden had actually won the majority of votes. That happened in 2018. He was then reelected in 2020 with a clear majority.
Well, I know you're newly elected, but as you've been talking to Maine residents prior to your election, what are the main concerns, confusion, or questions you hear from them about ranked choice voting?
Voter education is extremely important. So we always want to make sure that when a voter goes to the ballot box, they know how to make sure that their choices are fairly and adequately reflected. I will say that when we were part of this campaign in 2016 to bring ranked choice voting to Maine, we spent the summer having house parties and going to community events. And one of the techniques we would do would be to use ranked choice voting with alternative ice cream flavors. So you know that chocolate's your favorite, but vanilla is your second favorite, and you definitely don't want strawberry. The voters, doing that simple exercise and ranking their ice cream choices helped them process and understand how ranked choice voting might work at the ballot box. And the Secretary of State's office, my predecessor, worked very hard to make sure that voters had access to sample ballots and understood the process to cast their vote. But what voters really like about this is, in many ways, it increases civility in politics, because candidates are seeking not only that they be the first preference of the voters, ideally they want to be someone's first place vote, but when I was running my race, I would say, well, look, if I'm not your first choice, I'd like to be your second. And that definitely reduces negative campaigning. You don't want to be attacking your opponents because you want their voters to choose you for their second place. So that's one thing that voters like about it. And I already mentioned, you know, voters are really seeking to vote their principles and their heart rather than trying to be strategic about whether the candidate of choice has a chance of winning or not.
Are there any parts of the system that you think need additional work or things that aren't quite working the way you hope they would in Maine?
I think the system is working well. I think the what we're always seeking to improve, and the pandemic has revealed both the challenges and opportunities for this, is technological improvements. So Maine is a paper state. That is really important for us. But the process of tabulation can take a while because of the process of then collecting the ballots, bringing them back to the state capitol, and then tabulating them here centrally. So we are always looking to improve our systems. Utilizing technology for faster tabulation is one of my goals in office.
That's Shenna Bellows, Maine's Democratic Secretary of State. Secretary Bellows, thanks for your time.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
And still with us are Rob Ritchie, the president and CEO of Fair Vote, and Jason McDaniel, a political science professor at San Francisco State University. So, Professor McDaniel, I want to get your reaction to what we just heard from Secretary Bellows. There's perhaps a success story to be seen in Maine, but politics in Maine aren't the same as politics in every other state in the U.S. What are your thoughts?
That's right. I mean, Maine and pretty much as Rob was saying, most places that adopt ranked choice voting, a lot of voters do express satisfaction with it. But in my research, I look at how it affects voters overall, and I look for any potential downsides, any negative effects. And what I find is that it is more complex for voters, and that complexity is a barrier to participation. Right. In my research, I find that there is a decrease in voter turnout after the adoption of ranked choice voting. There is an increase in errors on the ballots. Again, these are relatively perhaps small increases, but they're significant. And I think the idea that more voices should be heard, if electoral reform decreases the turnout and if it increases ballot errors, then I think we might want to consider that negative effect because other research, not my own, does show that some people, especially older voters, report less understanding of the electoral process in ranked choice voting cities compared to older voters in non-ranked choice voting cities. So I think a lot of people are interested in electoral reform. We usually hear from the voices that are in favor of it. In my research, I try to look at those potential downsides, and I think it's important to consider those as well.
Well, Rob, we know voter turnout is already remarkably low in this country, and for local races, state races, the presidential election. Ranked choice voting advocates say that this method can help address that, but pointing to Professor McDaniel's research, what's your response to those who say we shouldn't make this process any more complicated than it already is?
It's always, I think there's balancing choices to make. And I think that the positive values that we see in RCV seem to be very real, right? That say in the Bay Area where we've had the longest standing use and that Professor McDaniel has done a lot of work on, we've seen a big expansion in the number of people of color winning seats. And winning seats in these sort of interesting districts that are where no racial group has a majority, and it's about coalition building, and it's about kind of a new politics with new, sets of voters, and figuring your way through that, and people of color candidates are doing quite well. Women are doing exceptionally well. I think turnout, I mean, there's a lot of numbers that are encouraging also. And I think, like, for instance, in San Francisco, when they had a open seat race for mayor a few years back, and they were voting for governor, more people voted for mayor in the same election in San Francisco then chose to vote for the governor race. And the in Maine, second highest turnout in the country of the voting age population last year. And of those who were at the ballot, the number of people who are now skipping congressional races with ranked choice voting has actually dropped sharply from before ranked choice voting. So there's a lot of things that are that we're finding encouraging. And I think what the Secretary of State said about voter education and kind of transitioning the system well, I think the more people use it, the better they seem to use it.
Professor McDaniel, some of your research has actually taken place in San Francisco. Is that accurate?
Absolutely, yes.
And tell me more about what you found there.
Well, I did find that there was turnout declines after the adoption of ranked choice voting in San Francisco. And while I could not, in that particular article, assign those as completely being caused by ranked choice voting, what I was most concerned about is that some of the disparities that we often see in city elections between more educated voters and more affluent voters, those disparities were increased after the adoption of ranked choice voting. And so, in my ballot error study, I also found that particularly people where English was not their first language, some older African-American areas where there was a lot of older African-American voters, we saw an increase in ballot errors. And so I do think that is a particular concern with certain kinds of voices, certain kinds of voters are going to be particularly, I think, perhaps disenfranchised. I think that might be a harsh term, but are going to be negatively affected by this.
Professor McDaniel, you've also studied the impact of ranked choice voting on political polarization. What does your research show?
So this was one of the most interesting questions, because I think a lot of people, as I believe the Phil who pitched the story talked about, sort of the perception that maybe there's something wrong or broken in our politics, and saying that polarization might be the problem, and maybe then ranked choice voting can solve or help ameliorate that problem. I looked at it in city elections in Oakland and San Francisco, which are nonpartisan. And yet, when we have nonpartisan elections, the number one sort of guide that voters use to guide their vote tends to be racial, ethnic, group identity. That tends to be the most important one. And so I looked at the question of whether there was a decline in the polarization between racial and ethnic groups, right? Were they, you know, more coming together? Were they crossing racial lines? And what I found is that there was no reduction in racially polarized voting after the adoption of ranked choice voting. And so, while I think it's possible that we'll see some decline in polarization, I don't think ranked choice voting people should assume that it will solve the problems of polarization or will be a panacea for what they think of as the problems of our democracy today.
Rob, some of this to me sounds like it's a timing issue. If you implement ranked choice voting, there may be an education curve when people are getting used to the voting system. I mean, do you have any longer term research you've been doing about how long it takes for this to really settle into a state as they're implementing it?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of places using ranked choice voting with a lot of numbers that we find super encouraging. I'll just give sort of one example: Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is about 50% Hispanic; Las Cruces, New Mexico, second biggest city in the state, is majority Hispanic. In their first uses of it for mayoral races in 2018 and 2019. High use of rankings, about 2/3 of voters in Santa Fe ranked all 5 mayoral candidates. Super low voter error, 99.9% cast valid ballots, and turnout was up from the recent elections. Now, does that mean it will always happen, each new use of it? No, but it does mean that there are a number of uses that are super positive. I think, 5 presidential primaries used ranked choice voting last year, and a lot of really good data from that that's reassuring to us. I think that it is something that really you have to get all the political players used to it, right? So people have to get used to running campaigns differently. That takes some time. The people who do endorsements have to kind of accept an endorsement culture of thinking beyond first choices. And sort of the more that happens, the more it settles in. Yes, it is a timing issue in the sense that it does get better and better. But I think we're also pretty encouraged by the fact that a number of uses have started off well as too.
Professor McDaniel, from your research, when a city or state or county is weighing whether to introduce ranked choice voting, what factors do you think they should consider?
Well, I think they definitely should consider if they have enough resources to really educate voters on how to use it. I agree with Secretary Bellows that is a really important issue, and it's something that I think San Francisco has done pretty well. That's the place I'm most familiar with because I live here in San Francisco. But it's also that the candidates should also be prepared to think about educating voters and changing the way they campaign, but also really working to educate voters on how to rank candidates. Because, as much as we might wish it were different, voters do find it more complicated to rank multiple candidates. It is a more complicated task. And so it's up to all of us to try to help educate voters. I think the number one issue that perhaps people should consider is, do they have a lot of candidates that are winning that are kind of spoiler candidates? Like we saw in Maine with the governor's race, there was a strong perception that the winning candidate was not supported by a majority. That is a major issue that I think some people do believe, and I believe that ranked choice voting can help solve that. But otherwise, I think people should consider the possible negative consequences for voters. That's the most important issue for me.
We're talking about ranked choice voting with Jason McDaniel, a political science professor at San Francisco State University. Also with us, Rob Ritchie, the president and CEO of Fair Vote. I'm Jen White. We'll hear more from you and our guests in a moment. Now let's get back to ranked choice voting with Rob Ritchie, the president and CEO of Fair Vote, and Jason McDaniel, a political science professor at San Francisco State University. And I want to add one more person to the conversation. Joining us now is Ali Swatek. She's the director of policy and research at the New York City Campaign Finance Board, which handles voter education and outreach. Ali, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much.
So in 2019, New York City voters approved a ballot measure to implement ranked choice voting for certain elections. Tell us more about how that measure came to pass.
Yeah, sure. So in 2019, we had a charter revision commission, and that's how in New York City we changed the charter, which is basically the city's constitution. So that commission put question number one on the ballot to establish ranked choice voting in primary and special elections for city office. And it's effective January 1st, 2021. 74% of New York City voters voted yes on that question. So here we are in 2021 using ranked choice voting.
And what elections will ranked choice voting apply to in New York City this year?
So ranked choice voting applies for the five city offices. So mayor, comptroller, public advocate, borough president, and 51 city council seats.
Now, since 2019, several New York City lawmakers filed a suit in the state Supreme Court to try to stop the implementation of the new voting system. And they cited inadequate education and outreach as some of their primary concerns. The NYC Campaign Finance Board is the body in charge of voter education and outreach. Talk about the work you all are doing ahead of the ranked choice voting rollout.
Yeah, so first and foremost, the CFB has a decade of experience doing education and outreach to New Yorkers ahead of elections. Informing voters that there is a local election taking place is just a huge undertaking in general. We see lower turnout in city elections, especially in primary elections, than we do for presidential elections, for example. So just at the outset, that's already a huge challenge. We're approaching this from an all-hands-on-deck approach, engaging not only government and civic organizations, but all organizations that are active in their communities in the five boroughs, just across the board. We're also, of course, the main component of our education effort is aimed at helping voters understand how to cast a ballot that counts. So just some examples, we post informational flyers in local businesses like laundromats and bodegas. We do direct mail, including a really extensive voter guide, and send that to every household in order to reach folks with less digital access. But then to reach young people, we engage primarily on social media. So that's like Twitter and Instagram. We do live Q&As, peer-to-peer outreach over text message. And for ranked choice voting specifically, we're using a train-the-trainer model to get community leaders and folks on the ground in every borough the information and resources that they need to train their constituents and members.
Well, we got this email from Bruce who says, as a 76-year-old, I find ranked choice voting easy to understand, an approach that encourages civility among candidates and an opportunity to save taxpayers money and inconvenience by avoiding runoff elections. And Dale emailed, the benefits of ranked choice voting sound great if you are starting with the assumption that each party wants to have everyone's vote count. One of our dominant political parties seems to want to reduce the voice of some voters at all costs. Professor McDaniel, your thoughts?
Well, you know, there definitely is a history of voter suppression in the last several decades, at least in this country. And so I understand the impulse and the sentiment. I worry then, of course, that if we are going to turn any voters away because of ranked choice voting, even if it may be for only several elections, that is something that I just prioritize the most, and that would break my heart. And so I think we should think about that when we think about whether ranked choice voting is something we want. If it turns off any voters at all, that should just be a priority for people.
Rob, what will you be watching most closely as New York rolls out ranked choice voting? Because this is a major city.
Yes, it's a major city. It's obviously time of COVID, so I'm hats off to all the government officials like our guest and the civic groups that are doing really a great job through that challenge of trying to reach people. The very first use of it is actually on Groundhog Day, February 2nd. There's a special election on the old system. You just vote for one person. Now you get to rank. There's eight candidates trying to fill the vacancy. Six of them are actually South Asian. There's never been a South Asian member of the city council in New York City. There's a former incumbent, a white male, who may be the most representative candidate there. But before, he would have really benefited from, you know, that fracturing of the South Asian candidate vote. We'll see what happens, but it definitely, you know, you will see voters ranking, you will see candidates reaching out to more people, and we'll just see. There's going to be five special elections with a lot of candidates, a big mayoral race with, I think, 15 candidates right now, and, you know, the candidate that wins will be the one who is, you know, does the best job of reaching beyond their base, but it's certainly a big, challenging place to use ranked choice voting, so we really want it to go well. Well, I would just comment briefly on the issue of Republicans and conservatives. We have a real chance to see ranked choice voting adopted for all primary elections in Utah with bipartisan support in the legislature. The outgoing governor was a strong supporter of that, and some key members of the legislature want to do that, building on its use in cities. And several Republican parties last year used ranked choice voting in very important ways, including the Indiana Republican Party nominated their new attorney general with ranked choice voting. Actually, the guy who won finished second in first choices. Virginia picked their new chair of their party and a congressional nominee that way. So it is something that I think we can see, basically people across the spectrum can see how it can address, fix a problem for them. And that's something that I think gives me hope.
Allie, give us an idea of what voter outreach looks like as you're trying to educate people about this new voting system, especially right now in the middle of a global pandemic when maybe some of the footwork or face-to-face conversations people could have can't really happen.
Yeah, that's a great point. So we've transitioned really quickly and swiftly as of 2020 to mostly digital, and we do a lot of Zoom trainings. we also appear, luckily in New York, I think folks have pretty enthusiastically adopted doing things over Zoom and doing things over over video or phone in some form. So I attended a Queens Borough Board meeting, for example, last night where everybody was on Zoom and presented about ranked choice voting. So folks have really pivoted, I think, to doing things digitally. It's been adopted pretty enthusiastically. But we are, of course, mindful of folks who aren't doing things online. And so we do direct mail frequently as well.
I'm curious about
COVID is a huge challenge.
Yeah. And I'm curious about people who would typically fall in the cracks. People, as you said, who may not be online, people who may be unhomed. How are you making efforts to reach those folks and ensure that they have access to their ballot?
Yeah. So the other piece I think that is really important is for folks who we don't gain access to before they enter the polling place, there's information that will be available on how to fill out a ranked choice ballot. In polling places, poll workers are going to be trained by the New York City Board of Elections to be able to explain ranked choice voting to folks who aren't sure about it. And we just recently saw the sample ballot for the February 2nd special election in District 24, which has a great explanation at the top of how to fill out their ballot. So for folks who we unfortunately don't get to speak to ahead of election day, ahead of when they cast their ballot, there is information available and folks available to help in polling places too.
How concerned are you at this point about voters being adequately prepared, or just about voter turnout being depressed because people think it's too complicated?
Yeah, so I will say over the last 4 years, we've seen an increase pretty much across the board in voter turnout. In New York, voter turnout is unfortunately very low. So in special elections, of which there are four taking place this year already that we know of, we generally see high single-digit turnout. So that's really not very high at all. The highest we ever saw was last year in a city council special where 11% of registered voters turned out. So as I was saying before, just from the outset, informing voters that there's a local election even taking place is a huge undertaking. Mm-hmm. I'm not so much concerned about the ranked choice voting discouraging folks from turning out. I'm more concerned about making sure that people know that there's a special election just because there's so little awareness of that to begin with in any year.
We're talking to Allie Swatek. She's the Director of Policy and Research at the New York City Campaign Finance Board. Also with us, Rob Ritchie, the President and CEO of Fair Vote, and Jason McDaniel, a political science professor at San Francisco State University. Let's get to one more voicemail. Here's what Caleb in Florida had to say about ranked choice voting.
My concern with ranked choice voting is that it might be difficult to maintain transparency in vote counting with this sort of system. I'm scared that people might inject doubt into the vote when it comes time to eliminate candidates and assign votes to higher ranking candidates.
Rob and Professor McDaniel, I want to hear from both of you on this. I mean, we've seen voters and elected officials create a lot of upheaval by disputing the results of the 2020 election. To what extent are you concerned that confusion around ranked choice voting could open the door to more misinformation or disinformation? Rob, I'll come to you first.
Yeah, well, thanks. I think there's some great assets for people to check out. There's a group called the Ranked Choice Voting Resource Center that really focuses on ballot counting with ranked choice voting and election administration run by former election officials. They have now, it's actually San Francisco was the first city to do it. It was also done in several other presidential primaries, done risk limiting audits with ranked choice voting, which is sort of the gold standard for how to confirm the accuracy of a count. This is not to say, as we can see right now from what's been going on in the country, that people can try to create doubt about actually pretty straightforward election results. So it is work to do with anything new. You know, the ballot will look different, the results will look different. So I think that, you know, say what we're seeing in New York City with the Campaign Finance Board and so on, that work is super important for making people feel comfortable with outcomes. But at least on the technical side, people should be assured the factual side is good. The perception is the one we have to work on the most.
Professor McDaniel, your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would say there's some, you know, relatively new work showing that support for ranked choice voting is divided along partisan lines, with Republicans less likely to support ranked choice voting than Democrats. And I do worry about there being a perception that this will become something that perhaps, Republicans, partisans and candidates, especially perhaps if they might lose, casting doubt on the outcomes of elections that are close, that perhaps might be decided by ranked choice voting. That is something I worry about. It's something I worry about the perception of, not the actual facts. We do know how to tabulate these elections. I have no doubt about that. I have a tremendous amount of faith in the way we run our elections in this country for the most part. But I do worry about that perception of illegitimacy that might happen if this becomes a partisan issue. And in the current context, that's something that I think we really, unfortunately, need to take very seriously. Mm-hmm.
Well, one thing we haven't touched on yet is money. Mark emailed, it's worth noting that ranked choice voting can also be a money saver for cities and counties. In North Carolina municipalities, we almost always have either a November primary and a December general election, or a November general election and a December runoff. Cities would save lots by reducing the number of elections. Rob, is that something you've seen play out in places that have adopted this?
That's a compelling reason for a lot of cities, because they typically have two rounds of voting. Like, say, in Utah, the cities that are debating it right now, a couple used it in 2019, and cities are making decisions about using it this year. And they all either will use ranked choice voting in only having a November election, or an August first round and then a November second round. And cost savings is definitely, you know, faster, cheaper, better is sort of a straightforward argument. I think the better, I don't want to lose sight of that. It's not just about being cheaper, but certainly it is. And, you know, the one loser might be the Georgia runoff, the TV stations that got about $500 million in ad money or whatever it was. But certainly that's not a reason to keep inefficient elections.
Well, let's wrap on this email from Linda, who says Cambridge, Massachusetts has had ranked choice voting for city council and school committee since 1941. When I moved there as a new voter in 1970, I learned that in order to vote responsibly, I had to be educated about the candidates. That set me on a path that has continued to this day. I've rarely missed an election. I'm hoping we'll be able to get this passed as a state, though I don't know if there is a path for that. Professor McDaniel, as more cities weigh whether to implement ranked choice voting going forward, in the next 30 seconds, what will you be watching for and researching?
I'm going to be looking especially at equality of political representation, especially along racial ethnic lines and gender lines. That's what I want to see. Does ranked choice voting affect that either positively or negatively or not at all?
And very briefly, Rob, what's next for you and your organization?
Yeah, well, we'd like that stat, because the stats so far look quite good on those numbers. So I'm glad Jason will be looking more deeply into it. I think that these next, both the the variety of places that move to it. I don't want it to be just certain kinds of cities and states. I want it to be kind of a whole mix of cities and states, and I'm feeling pretty encouraged about the chance for that.
That's Rob Ritchie, the president and CEO of Fair Vote. It's a nonpartisan organization that advocates for election reform measures, including ranked choice voting. Also with us, Jason McDaniel, a political science professor at San Francisco State University, and Ali Swatek, the director of policy and research at the New York City Campaign Finance Board. Ali, Rob, Jason, thanks so much for your time. A quick reminder to subscribe to the 1A podcast. It's where you'll find our best guests and stories every day, and you can listen whenever you'd like. Get it wherever you find your podcasts. Today's producer was Catherine Fink. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen White. Thanks for listening. Let's talk again tomorrow. This is 1A.